Hello, and welcome to Eurexis Smart Talks.
The Smart Talks podcast series is an EU-funded Eurexis project, which provides information and assistance to researchers at any career stage.
Eurexis supports the European research area in its ambition to create a single, borderless market for research, innovation, and technology across the EU.
We support researchers in mobility, careers within and beyond academia, innovation, and entrepreneurship.
We strive to enhance scientific collaboration between Europe and the world.
Today, we will be discussing ERC grants, and our main focus will be on the interview where researchers need to pitch their ideas. European Research Council offers prestigious grants for different level of researchers, but all of them are meant to be excellent. There are a lot of different opportunities for more or less experienced researchers. ERC starting grants, ERC consolidator grants, ERC advanced grants, ERC proof of concept, ERC synergy grants. In order to have a whole picture of how to prepare better for the interview, we will have two episodes of our podcast focusing on ERC grants. And we are excited to announce both of our speakers. Professor Maximilian Schick from Tallinn University, that was evaluating ERC grantees, and Daphne Goldmelchior, who supports researchers in their path to the grant. So today, we're happy to welcome Professor Maximilian Schick from Tallinn University. Maximilian is a multidisciplinary scientist and art historian who collaborates towards a systematic understanding of art and culture using critical and creative aesthetics, qualitative inquiry, quantitative measurement, and computation. Welcome. So, Maximilian, how can ERC applicants strike a balance in the level of the disciplinary specific information in their presentation, such that experts in their fields from among panelists are impressed by the depth and innovation, while the experts in other fields among the panels can still understand sufficiently to be able to confidently vote on the quality of the work? Is it a good idea to include any data that you know some of the panel will not understand?
So in general, talking about the second stage interviews, right, that's factually O'Reilly Ignite talk or a Pecha Kucha talk or a short TED talk. Don't do TED. But again, there is a hierarchy of awesomeness going on. And I always compare this to, you know, there's people who just give a talk and they're awesome or not so awesome. Some people do it like poetry and they're awesome and not so awesome. And other people go full out, you know, sort of James Brown or Mariah Carey about it. That is also awesome or not so awesome. So this is a performance. This is like what I'm saying here. And I do think it is important to sort of point out to people who you are. The grade for the PI needs to be commensurate with the proposal, so obviously needs to be excellent minimum. It's something that is mostly evaluated briefly relative to the idea. But nevertheless, you know, there may be doubts which people sort of like may bring up. Some of us who do this long enough are familiar with them. Like if you're multidisciplinary and you publish in minimum two disciplines, you have to assume that most of the panels don't know half your journals, for example, right? So obviously put a slide up and say, you know, here's PRL, which is the top tier journal in physics. Even if you're an art historian, you need to point it out because nobody will tell them the probability that somebody in the room will know is zero, basically, right? Or like very, very low. That said, you only have 5 to 7 minutes, okay? So it needs to be the poetry version. So think about like, what is the poetry version of a scientific paper? It's the, again, Nature Summary Abstract Paragraph. If you don't have time to read that, every Nature Summary Abstract Paragraph has a here we show sentence. So every ERC proposal needs a here we aim to show sentence. And in a similar way, the already very short summary of your CV, which is 2 plus 2 pages plus a funding ID. Think about what the here we show sentence of that is. Like, what are the things people evaluate you for? And it's very clear, according to the criteria, there will be your publications. So that means have the titles sort of like in bold, have the publication venues also highlighted, maybe in a different way, maybe in italic, so people know the journals, they actually know the publishers, like, you know, Oxford University Press or Routledge, maybe one thing, you know, the journal may be another thing. There is a thing which, you know, if you have published in an obscure journal, but this is your most awesome article, for example, because, I don't know, the Journal of Middle Akkadic Clay Tablets is the thing in your field, and you know there's only, 60 clay tablets that fulfill maybe the spec of that journal, that put the reference there and give a little explanation what that is. Okay, so basically, imagine then the poetry version is the titles and the publishers of your top five things, maybe. Then the second thing is, are you international? And, that is easy to prove. If there's a clear thing, like some people have their bachelor, master's, PhD, assistant professorship, and full professorship at the same university, then please underscore how you're international, because this is really hard to argue. And the same is true for funding. Some of us are in fields where a lot of funding is not sort of a thing you may think about. Like, so then, you know, if you don't have 250, 350K, which is sort of the average for people who go for an ERC starting grant, then, you know, explain and say, maybe you got a PhD and a postdoc grant, which funded you for 5 years, which in any other field would be the equivalent of 150K. It's just like not, you know, it may be not explicit. Then say that, not in the funding ID, but on page one or something like that. So these are the kind of things that these three aspects sort of like are something that you should sort of emphasize. But at the same time, do not write a self-panegyric.
So what would be your advice on how to have the balance of presenting the proposal that high risk, high gain, and at the same time, something that is more on the safe side?
The panels will totally see through the fact if a lukewarm proposal uses groundbreaking in every second sentence. Ideal groundbreaking stuff doesn't use the word groundbreaking at all. You just read the proposal and say, yeah, that's groundbreaking. So that is sort of like something which is very, very important. And so the key take home is poetry, 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 poetry. So look at good poetry, look at good talks. That is like, you know, the best publications in your discipline are role models maybe for what you're doing. Maybe the best publications in other disciplines are your role model is also cool, maybe even better. And the same is true for these kind of performances. What you need to know, and I think that is something which I tell everybody who sort of like gets one of those, it feels utterly like a job interview, right? So you get into this posh building, you ride the elevator, you're in a waiting room, you wear your best suit or your best sort of like pantsuit, whatever, and you enter the room and you think this is the big show, and then the moment you walk through the door, you figure out this is a tiny room. Probably even if it's cold outside, windows are open because the amount of oxygen used in this room is massive. It's a marathon for the people in the room. So it's a room that sort of fits 15 people and has 16 in them, it feels like. It's very, very small. People have engaged or engaging in this for 40 interviews straight over 5 days. And if you're on Thursday lunchtime, they already went through sort of like 25 of them. And it's working the same way. You walk in, you give your talk on a tiny screen, by the way, or relatively tiny screen. Then you have questions and answer very quickly. You exit the room and then the panel discussion happens. That's even more intensive than your talk, because that's where sort of like the opinions are sort of like exchanged. And there is something where there is certain things that need to be discussed. So there is some that make it to stage two that should totally be rejected, but you didn't see it because sometimes, you know, there's conflicting messages in the proposals. It's not perfect. So that are the ones that are sort of like, you know, the weird thing is at that stage, you will get an A. So your signal is maybe the wrong one, right? And on the other hand, the other 95%, there is sort of like, there's another sort of boundary of where people discuss, which is like, are you within the funded ones or not within the funded ones? And each panel can fund about 20 proposals out of 140, say. And so that kind of boundary is sort of something that may be contested. So the super awesome ones, they're just safe. And the not so awesome ones, they just don't get it.
Do you recommend to use the help of the designer, for example, for preparing their slides before they pitch their research, for example?
Research proposals are a design problem. Okay, so there is no such thing as you calling in the designer. There is no such thing as you calling in a designer for a figure that brings the evidence for what you want to show. It's the researcher that needs to have the authority to show the evidence. So there is no such thing as dressing up research. Research process is a design problem. The visuals of figures are a design problem. And so that is something, if you can show that, like if this is part of your thing, you should totally do it. Like slay with it. Like here's the thing, like if you get 140 proposals, 120 are, no, actually that's not true. 135 are actually following the guideline of Times New Roman. I had a colleague at the School of Arts and Technology at UT Dallas who said, like, the PhD guideline for dissertation thesis is Times New Roman. If you still use Times New Roman, and you sort of, you know, basically the dissertation committee will reject PhD dissertations that are not using Times New Roman. But he said, like, if you do a PhD with me and you still use Times New Roman when you hand in your PhD, you basically have failed. So the kind of key thing is there's these five proposals who are not also awesome in the content. They're also awesome in typography. They're also awesome in figure design. If this is your thing, don't hide it. Put it in the proposal. Put a figure there. Show what you can do. That will win your proposal. At the same time, you need to talk to people who think that figures are just illustrative. They're just creative, not analytic, or whatever. Or just design, and all the stuff needs to be in the text. So the text is something that needs to say everything you say in a figure. Don't assume somebody can read your figures. That is the problem. So always also say it, also have text, and so on. Now, all that said, that is sort of something which I would assume people in multidisciplinary science are used to top-tier multidisciplinary science journals, like Nature, whatever, PNAS, they are used to. They're like, yeah, that's totally. I spend a lot of time into my figures. And I would never, ever allow a designer to sort of dilute them. Now, here's the thing. There is fields, there is topics where you don't need visuals. You don't need an animation. This is like let me make a comparison. If you're a Protestant priest, you do not want to use the instrumentarium of Jesuit Counter-Reformation to convince your audience. If you're a poet, convince with words. If you are want to give an awesome slide presentation in a string of 40 slide presentations where everybody puts energy to have cool visual clip art and whatever, like pictures of their university, neat little, you know, they talk about computational social science and have people running through Penn Station in a sort of like cinematographic way. If you're the person, you say, look, I actually focus on Japanese haiku poems, which, by the way, have a cool iconography in terms of typography. And all you show is a bunch of slides with very little text on while still conveying the information. People will remember your talk. That is true for among the top Ignite talks on Earth, the top Pichakucha talks on Earth. There is talks that have one word on each slide. The problem is people pick up on that, and then it's a genre again. It's like TED Talks. You know, it has been sort of done to death, and even Sarah Silverman cannot sort of like fix the problem. That is sort of like the key thing. Like you're walking into a world where this is a performance genre that happens behind closed doors, but it's the same as the one that happens in open doors. So look at good talks, how they're done, and actually do them. Pick your genre. Take what you can do best. If you're not good in talking, if you're not good in showing slides, but you're writing an awesome proposal, emphasize that. That is also cool. People will see your excellence. Like basically what people want to see is your naked excellence, what you are really good at. And so that is, I think, something which is really important, because otherwise we end up in this sort of soup of things that are like over-designed, where you have a designer come in and a writer and ChatGPT writing something that should sound like an ERC proposal and stuff like that. And that may fly for 1 year and then it's over. And it's like, that is sort of like a really, really important thing, which I may also be sort of on a lonely platform. Like not every panelist may think like that, But in the long run, this is sort of like what characterizes awesome research, right? You don't want to have a photographer sort of like profiling somebody who is drawing with ink and pen. And so that is sort of like, you know, use your ink and your pen and show people what you can do.
Do you advise an applicant to mention that they are already previously participated in this procedure?
So this is not a review with major revisions, right? So there's two cases. One is if you make it to round two, or you don't make it to round two, but you still got an A and you can apply within a year, then you get a completely different panel. That's number one. You may have a reviewer at the second stage, simply because out of the 10, you know, no external reviewers answer. And then like when panelists get emails. so there may be somebody who's aware of that. So, but it's not review with major revision. So you don't need to write a rebuttal letter and sort of like mark your changes in blue or something like that. There's a slightly other case, which is if you get rejected and you get a B, which by the way, there is no correlation with how awesome you are in getting a B. This is also a problem, the inverse problem as people getting to interview and people not getting to interview. People who don't get to interview and are rejected for a year, they're sort of like have a hard time at their own home institution. Then you are very, very likely that at least part of your panel is the same panelists. Okay. This has to do with the ERC having a hard time finding people who do this efficiently. And so that's the reason that every 2 years there's sort of kind of a resonance. You cannot do it more than 3 or 4 times. Then you sort of thrown out in my position that everybody knows, oh, that guy was a panelist. And then you do interviews like this. And actually, this is sort of like officially endorsed by the ERC to sort of like spread the message about how the process works. So if that happens, you walk into a situation where people, particularly if it really was bad, people will remember what you did. If there is images in there, people will remember what you did. So there is chances to do better, right? Like if you have a figure and you say, okay, this is my process and this is my workflow, and people said like, oh, there is no feedback loop in your workflow. So you don't take into account what happens if your data doesn't answer your questions, like do you get more data or do you prepare more data, whatever. So you know, then put that feedback thing in and they say like, you know, you can say that, you could say that you did improve stuff like that. But obviously think about it. This is 2 years later. Don't hand in the same thing because, you know, you're cutting edge. I mean, science has moved. There's stuff happening, right? So if you, like, let me give an example. If you hand in an ERC proposal in 2011, say, or in 2012 and or 2013, that talks about something which from 2013 onward should have used or at least be aware of machine learning, because there was a big revolution in 2013, you should totally like mention, and not just saying, oh, that also exists, but like take into account, how do you live in a world with your non-machine learning thing in a machine learning world? And so that is sort of like, I think, super, super important, right? And so this is sounds sort of weird, but for many disciplines, this is utterly clear, right? So in a post-fMRI world, you don't hand in a proposal that is not at least aware that fMRI machines do exist, for example, right?
Should one expect that the panel is already aware of their research, or should the grant applicant prepare themselves better and repeat a little bit of something that was in the proposal?
Yes, you totally can expect that people know your proposal, they know the arguments, they are waiting in your talk to address issues which you have to anticipate that are in these reviews which you don't know. Is your method sound... method is the scientific approach / method. Is your corpus of material there? Is there a true risk? Is there a true high gain? What are the fields you're actually sort of like pushing the boundary at? Going beyond the state of the art list of disciplines. What's the challenge you address? Is there a straw man or is it an actual true challenge and stuff like that? It's very simple on the one hand. Be aware, a subset of people is super aware of what you're talking about. They have very concrete questions. So this is sort of like, I like to compare this to, like, if you think about the argument of people who have their stuff together in parliaments, like Elizabeth Warren, for example, the way she argues, that is a good thing. Like, you know, like think about people like that. Don't ramble. This is not an election campaign. this is actually about specific subjects. It's more like a court of law where certain things need to be solved. You need to remind people, this is what my project is about. And then the reviewers only, and the panelists are only interested in these kind of things where they're saying, oh, they're unclear, is this really good or is it not that good? If you can show that, that is great. But if you show the visualization and for whatever reason you've forgotten that in your thing, for example, you could say, oh, the dynamic visualization of blah, blah shows blah, blah, show that. That's the moment also, even if they encourage against animations, you know, try to find a way around it, do frames or whatever. Like, this is sort of like, there is moments when you need to sort of like make that thing. I have a Science Magazine paper. The upload limit was 6 megabytes, and I had a video with 60 megabytes where every frame contained information. And at some point, the editor said, you need to shorten it. And I was like, I cannot. Every frame contains information, and it's crucial for the paper. It was my worst 24 hours of my life because I thought they're going to reject the paper. They accepted the 60 megabytes. So at the ERC, that's the kind of level you need to operate. Sometimes you need to convince the panel that things they don't believe are true. And these 5 to 7 minutes are the 5 to 7 minutes where you can show that they're true.
What would be your advice, like in general, to all the applicants?
Yeah, it's very, very simple. You have one single mission in this whole thing, which is to convince the panelists that you fulfill the evaluation criteria the most excellent way. This is what needs to be communicated. Don't obfuscate it with anything else. And there is many ways how to do this. You can have a summary slide. You can have a slide where only the one thing that you think is sort of like questionable and whatever. So again, this is, it seems like a strong core set, and it is. And the problem with all our coaching is that we sort of like make it ever more narrow towards that kind of convention. This is like in skiing where there is 3 or 4, like slalom, giant slalom, super G and downhill. And then everything looks like that. But let's make no mistake, the future of research is more looking like the X Games. Actually, it's not looking like the X Games. It's like what people do on a mountain where the X Games don't exist yet. And the ERC is sort of the X Games version, where it is already slightly in a corset, but it should not be super, super, super only conventional. That's your moment to improvise. Like, use the bounding of the instrument of how the proposal should look like, of how the talk should look like. Like, use that corset to sort of like improvise doing the most awesome things which people don't expect in the convention. I think that is sort of like, it's very similar to other forms of performance art. If you want to be successful, you can do that. And that may very well mean, you know, playing a very conventional piece, basically.
Thank you very much. I hope this will be very useful for our listeners. And
Can I say one last thing?
Yeah, sure.
I would like to have a message for the people who don't get it. The fact that you're going for this, the fact that you're writing an ERC proposal, the fact that you have an idea that you think is awesome, the judgment you get why you don't get it is not a diminishing of your awesomeness, your sort of verve and your courage to go for something that is awesome. Let your mission and your motivation to be awesome not be diminished by that kind of evaluation. That is something which is super important. If you look into the mirror, you are valuable. That is important. Don't let yourself be diminished by 12 people on a panel.
Thank you very much, Maximilian. I think we should stop this discussion on this hopefully positive note for everyone. Don't be discouraged, and we will keep on exploring how to become an ERC grantee. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Euraxess Smart Talks.
We hope you enjoyed this episode and can't wait to share more with you next time.
You can follow us and find more episodes on the Euraxess portal or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode was prepared by audio engineer Pavle Drashkovic, outreach manager Daria Aksyonova, production manager Lea Nirenberg, editors Isar Pear and Miroslav Trajanovic.
This episode is published under the Creative Commons CC BY license. Thanks for listening.